He lays a gas tank on a table and he gives me a whole gallon of Bondo. I just pile this thing on there and I let it get like rock hard. And I just sit there and I sand. I was probably there for 12 hours. Towards the end of the night, he comes up to me and he's like, "All right, grind all the off. Come back tomorrow. I'll show you how to do it right."
This episode of the Fabricator Podcast is brought to you by Nuts, Bolts, and Thingamajigs. Interested in a career in welding, CNC machining, or metal fabrication? Apply for scholarships through NBT to help fund your future in the skilled trades. Submit your application today for the fall 2023 semester. The deadline to apply is March 31st.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fabricator Podcast, not broadcast. I made that mistake earlier. I'm Dan Davis with the Fabricator. I'm here with Lincoln Bruner.
Hello.
With Tube and Pipe Journal and the Fabricator.
Yes, sir.
And we got a good episode coming up today with Christian Sosa of Sosa Metalworks.
Yeah, based out of Vegas.
Yeah, and he kind of talks about his storybook childhood, kind of bounced around some jobs, and it got us thinking, like, you know, our first experiences in the work world.
What are the crummiest jobs you can ever have? The ones that come first.
Yeah.
And it really kind of led to, like, he's got this drive-through open neon sign. I don't know where he got it from. It's a Taco Bell drive-through sign, right?
Right.
So bring back good memories for you?
Yeah. So I was going to, like, that was, like, my first thing. I was fortunate enough to, like, punk-ass kids. My parents got me a car when I graduated high school with the caveat that I had actually to pay for my own insurance, which means usually you need a job to earn money in America.
Usually.
So I got a job at Taco Bell, and back then they made their employees wear polyester uniforms.
Oh, is that like the brown? And
it was maroon.
Did you have to ring the bell?
No. I had pants that literally were probably 2 inches too, like, short. So I walked around like with white socks and brown shoes.
I want to go back in time and see.
No, I don't. And the worst High was rise. Like this ill-fitting, like, sun visor they were making me wear internally.
It was like instant penance.
Yeah. So there's like so many, like, and they threw me on the cash register, and this is before the days of like
the idiot machine where you just push the button.
Yeah, like everything had a button on the thing. Yeah. But there's like 100 buttons on this cash register. So somebody, the famous story would be like, someone would pull up to the drive-thru and they're like, "Oh yeah, I'd like a burrito with green sauce." And I'd stare at that cash register and I couldn't find green sauce. I'm like, "All right, sure, please pull around." I hit red sauce. Like, what? I don't care. What are you going to do, complain?
But then they get it with red sauce.
Talk to the manager.
Yeah. Then they get it with red sauce, exactly. And then they care.
Depends on what time of day it is, too. Yeah, they're rolling in at like 1 a.m.
For that short period of that order, I was God. Like, I was going to impact their life.
You will like this red sauce and take it.
Yes. Yes.
Well, how long did you last at Taco Bell?
So I've only been asked to leave one place, and I wasn't working that day. So I just came to pick up my paycheck and left. So technically I just never went back to work, even though I was fired. That's a video rental story. Back to Taco Bell, the favorite story there was, it was a surprise inspection by the regional manager. Shows up, and above the fryer's its own story. So this is back in the day where you had to like do to do the taco salad bowl, and the taco salad bowl was about the size of a small high school basketball stadium.
Right. Was that the edible? Like, you could eat the bowl.
Yes,
it was like
correct.
A shell.
Yeah. So you would throw the tortilla in the middle of this defat fryer, and they gave you, it looked like a brand. It was a stainless steel thing, and you would stick it in the middle.
It was a brand.
Yeah, and it would fold up. But, you know, it floats, it moves, and I'm not good. I don't have good hand-eye coordination. So I'd do it, and it'd come up all lopsided, and you just throw it to the side and do another one. So I was not on the station this day. But the regional manager came in. He's kind of doing an inspection. And kind of like, it looked like what happens, like you see on TV with, like, army shows. You know, guys walking around and adjusting people's, like their medals. Oh, and
I imagine like Gus from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, little uptight. So anyway, he goes up, and there above the fryer was a picture of all the things that were fried and how long they needed to be in the fryer. So he sits up there, he leans over the fryer, he adjusts it to make it straight, so he pulls back to look at his handiwork, and the thing falls and shatters, glass everywhere. And I just bust out laughing.
Right.
Did it get into that glass where it ended up?
Right into the fryer.
Yeah, no. So it fell behind it. So it was behind on the wall, falls behind it, goes all over the place. And, you know, obviously, you might know this about commercial kitchens. You can't, it's not like shag carpeting back there. So it's all, you know, tile. You clean up pretty easily. So anyway. But that, yeah.
Push it down a drain.
So really, like, how long were you at that Taco Bell?
It was only a summer. It was only like 3 months. But okay. Literally, I'm probably, so everybody's like, oh, you must not eat there anymore. I'm like, just the opposite. It's like, yeah. I'd never eaten there until I started working there.
Gave you the taste.
And they're going to hate this, but like, it was almost like everyday buffet. And the best part it was.
Bites out of people's orders.
Messed that one up.
I'm not even going to say, because I don't want to get, I don't know if there's a statute of limits on some of the crimes I committed in that kitchen. But the best was, like, they wouldn't give you free food. This is how, like, horrible the fast food industry is. Oh, you've worked in a 6-hour shift on a Friday night. You can have 20% off your order. What? No. So people would make it as they were making other orders and just hide it.
Yes.
Hide it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you'd go to reach to, like, get some detergent and a burrito would hit you in the head because somebody was saving it for
they forgot
later.
It was up there?
Oops. That was from last You're Friday.
Like, depending on how long it's been up there.
Yeah. Who knows, really?
Mm. Yeah, so, no date on those things.
No. Well,
you lasted longer at Taco Bell than I lasted at KFC.
Oh,
that
dude.
Was your first job?
5 days I was at KFC. It was probably my second or third job.
You did it.
And I did it. I went to KFC and I came home covered in a layer of grease because every last thing at KFC is cooked in this oil.
Yeah.
And it would vaporize and it would just settle on anything in its path. And I come home and it 2 showers minimum. Oh. And that my hair was just caked in this awful, like, 11 herbs and spices, flour and grease. Came home smelling like, you know,
like the colonel,
a bucket of chicken. Yeah. And yeah, the colonel would have been proud. So, and I had these old loafers. I thought, oh, I can just trash these shoes. And I would, at the end of the shift, I would slide across the floor like Mark Hamill or like Mark, what's his name from the 84 Olympics?
Hayden.
Mark Hayden or Eric Hayden. Jeez, yeah.
Oh, never mind. This is going off the rails.
It's going off the rails. But that was 5 days was enough to convince me that fast food was never before or never.
So they pressure cooked that, right?
Everything.
Yeah.
Well, they just fryer cooked everything, the fries, the chicken.
So the chicken wasn't like in a pressure fryer?
No. Really? It was just in an open fryer. I really hope Christian Sosa never worked at Taco Bell.
No, he didn't strike me the type.
No.
No, I think he's
somehow he got that drive-through open sign, though.
No, but that's pretty cool.
I respect it.
Yeah.
So speaking of first jobs, if anyone listening has an interesting story about their first job working in metal fabrication, email it to us at, Dan, what is the email? You know it now.
The email is podcast@thefabricator.com.
Yeah, that's right. You got it.
Yeah. And this is the first of a 2-part episode with Christian Sosa of Sosa Metalworks.
That's right.
So enjoy.
This episode of the Fabricator Podcast is brought to you by FMA. Master the fundamentals of roll forming operations at the FMA World Class Roll Forming Certification Course. Join us April 11th through 13th in Elgin, Illinois for a specialized course to learn the history, terminology, and processes of roll forming. Register online today at fmamfg.org/events.
Hello, welcome to the Fabricator Podcast. We're recording this at the FMA annual meeting in Las Vegas, Nevada. Being in Nevada.
Or Nevada.
Nevada. I know we had this discussion earlier. being here enables us to have access to some people we probably normally wouldn't get in the Chicago area, although we'd learned our guest was in Milwaukee recently, so maybe we slept on that one. But today, once again, Dan Davis with Fabricator Magazine, Jim Gorzik with FMA and the Fabricator Magazine. Our guest today is Christian Sosa. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah,
Sosa Metalworks started out with Counting Cars, the folks running that shop here in Vegas, and now he's doing his own thing, has been since
2010.
And we're going to talk about his career and kind of what he's up to nowadays. And I think we can just jump into it since you were saying you had to tell this story several times. But for the folks that don't know you very well, how did you start your current business, Social Metalworks, and kind of tie that in with your experience with our friends over at Counting Customs?
So I started, it's kind of like a crazy story, you know, because I usually don't tell people that I work accounts, and it's been a while since I started kind of like letting people know about that, because I didn't want it to be something that was like that would make people want to know about me. I was always more interested in showing my work
first,
people to get to know me around my work. But yeah, I started working there when I was about 16 years old. I worked at a hot rod shop across the street. It's called Chubby's Hot Rods at the time. And I got fired from Chubby's Hot Rods because I wasn't that smart. Not that I'm smart now. But yeah, I was working on this like 57, and it had wide tires on the back and like skinnies up front. And it was a Friday night, and I was like trying to get out of there quick. So by mistake, I put the back one in the front. And the guy made a turn and kind of messed his fender up. So I showed up on Monday to let him know that I was getting let go. So when I worked at Chubby's, we had a little store up front where we sold valve covers, like chrome valve covers, things like that. So this guy, his name was George, one of the originals at Counts. He would stop by every time with a different car, and so I would talk to him, and one day I went over there to borrow a torque wrench or something that I needed, and I walked into the shop for the very first time, and it was, I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever been there, but from the outside it's just a warehouse, but
when
you walk in, it's like walking in the, you know, genie's lamp or something.
Yeah.
Just this amazing place, and I was really young, 16, and I've been in the car since I was, you know, 10, younger than that, since I was a child.
Yeah.
But really, like really, really into cars since I was about 10. So yeah, I walk in there and I just thought it was the most amazing place in the world. So this was just a couple of weeks before the whole incident at Chubby's, and so I got fired. I walk over to Counts and I ask if they you know need some help, and they ask if I know how to do body work. So I kind of fibbed a little bit, you know. I've done body work, but I don't know how to do it. I did a little bit of Bondo stuff, and Ryan, the painter, he tells me to come in the next day, and I do. I show up on Saturday, and he lays a gas tank on a table, and he gives me a whole gallon of Bondo, and I just sit there and I mix the Bondo up and I pile the whole gallon of Bondo, thinking that that's how it's supposed to be done. He just kind of walks in. Again. Yeah, he just kind of walks in every 15 minutes just to see what I'm doing, and you know, I just pile this thing on there and I let it get like rock hard. And I just sit there and I sand. I was probably there for 12 hours. I don't know if you guys know Ryan, but Ryan works 7 days a week, like 25 hours a day. Like he never stops, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, he just keeps watching me, you know, keeps coming in, just, you know, seeing what I'm doing. And towards the end of the night, he comes up to me and he's like, "All right, grind all this shit off. Come back tomorrow. I'll show you how to do it right." So I show up the next day. But basically, he was testing me. He wanted to see what I'd put into it. And I stayed there all day and night with him, you know, sanding on that thing, like not giving up.
Yeah.
And Ryan took me under his wing.
That's awesome. I was, before we started recording this, I was watching a video that was done of your build for the Royal Enfield people. And it was provided a little moment of reflection about where you came from and, you know, growing up, your dad was a dentist.
Yeah, my dad is a dentist.
And the statement you made was, you know, him teaching you the value of work.
Right.
And that story really kind of exemplifies that point. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a little bit of background on that?
Yeah, so I won't go like super far because my life is kind of wild. I come from like a crazy place.
But, yeah.
But I'm from Mexico originally. So my dad is a dentist in Mexico. So when he had his practice, he also did all of his lab work.
Okay.
So if you were in there to get a, you know, dentures or whatever, he would do it all.
Oh wow.
So he had an area where he would do that type of work, and I would go into work with him every day. So he was teaching me how to do these things. He really wanted me to be a dentist. He wanted me to do the same thing, and I, something about being in men's mouths that just does it. It just, yeah. I don't really want it. Didn't you sound like fun. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, cars or, yeah. or fixing
one,
people's
one
teeth.
One is not moist.
Yeah. yeah. So, yeah, that didn't sound like fun. So I just, you know, I really like being there because I can work. I enjoyed working with my hands and I enjoyed, you know, being able to focus on something and starting and finishing something. I remember,
and,
this was when I was 7-8 years old,
yeah.
and I was very young. And I did it up until I was 10. Actually, when we moved to the States, he still had, that's what he did. He had his lab out in Vegas. So I still did it till I was about 12 years old.
Okay.
And yeah, just working, just being able to focus on like this small thing and going from start to finish and not giving up on it, you know.
Yeah.
It has to get done.
Right.
So that really put something in my head about, you know, having proper work ethic in it, and it stuck with me.
Yeah. So did you always know that you want to do something with your hands in terms of like a
career
or outlet?
So if you really ask me where I started working with my hands, the real place is from my grandmother. She from knitting, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. My grandmother taught me how to knit when I was like really young, like 3 years old, something like that. And I, to this day, I remember just sitting there and being really obsessed with focusing.
It's kind of focus,
on, on making something, you know, something out of nothing. You know, knitting, it's like you don't have very much. All you have is your hands, a couple of needles, and you know, the thread.
But you can see it kind of come
to
life.
You start and you see it starting to come to life. So it's exciting. Yeah. And it's a constant thing that you're kind of like communicating with, and you're going back and forth with it.
Right.
So, fun. I mean, I've always really been the type that has worked with my hands since, you know, I remember being like a child and living in Mexico. And I was telling this story yesterday to a couple of the guys, or the day before, because somebody asked me where I got like kind of the drive for making things. And you know, I remember living in Mexico and kind of dumpster diving, not even dumpster because people just throw their trash on the side of the street, but just kind of wandering around and looking for like people that would throw away like old radios or you know, any kind of electronics or anything. I would grab them, take them apart, and I would take like the little electric motors, the little lights or whatever, and the wires, and I'd kind of create my own little toys out of these things since I was, you know, really small.
Always
kid.
There.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I've just always been into kind of creating things.
Where did the path come? Where did the builds come in terms of fascination with cars and maybe motorcycles?
So I grew up kind of in a rough neighborhood here in Vegas, and with that, for some reason, lowriders are always like really into that kind of area, or the I don't want to say in rough areas because it's not true at all.
Yeah.
I've been to, I know a lot of people that are very well off that
are
into lowriding, but I'm saying at the time, a lot of the people that were in that area, you know, the lowriders were around, and I'd never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing it for the first time and just kind of being fascinated with it.
Yeah.
And then by some weird coincidence, like soon after that, I found my first lowrider magazine and I was obsessed.
Yeah.
And I just never, I never looked back. I remember my very first lowrider somebody let me borrow. But my second one, I went, I didn't have any money. So I would go to like the gas station for whatever. And I found out that they sold them there. They were like $6-7, you know?
Yeah.
I was just there for my bag of hot Cheetos.
Yeah, there you go.
But the guy kind of saw something in me, the guy that was behind the counter. And he was like, hey, if you go into dumpster right now, we just threw all of our magazines from last month out. They would rip the front page and they dumped them all out,
right?
You know, so that way you can't resell them. So I jumped right in there and I grabbed, you know, all as many magazines as I can fit. And yeah, I would just always do that. And I just got like obsessed with that with lowriding for a long time.
So did that lead to learning to do it yourself, or
so then what happened? So yeah, I wasn't the best kid when I was young, you know? But yeah, I left school when I was pretty young. I was probably technically I didn't even finish junior high school. So I got into, because I couldn't kind of qualify to go into high school, I was entered into this program that taught, you had an option of a couple of different things. It was a diesel mechanic, carpentry, plumbing, and welding. And to me, the closest thing to being able to work on cars was to take this welding program. You know, I instantly thought about that. Like, yeah, if I learn how to weld, I can do stuff. Yeah,
you're kind of fired up.
Yeah, so I started doing that. I was about 13 years old when I went into that. I'd be like freshman in high school. So I did that for, I mean, I was still a bad kid, so I didn't finish it. But I did that for about 6 months, and I had a neighbor who was building like gates and stuff outside, and I just
ornamental
stuff. So I would just go next door and I'd help him out, you know, and he would teach me. He was kind of teaching me how to weld even more, how to cut and do stuff like that. So yeah, from there, it jumped. Once I started doing that, I was getting a little bit more into it, and I started taking some automotive classes at the community college, which I don't even know how I got in, because I was like maybe 15 years old. It was like a night class. Yeah. I was the youngest kid there.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, I was able to do that. And then I jumped into changing oil. And then for whatever reason, I got lucky and I got into Chubby's Hot Rods, the place that I told you that I got let go of being. Yeah, I was just kind of a helper there. I was just doing whatever.
Were you the type of kid that got along okay with older people? Because that, to me, that's not normally.
That's the funny thing.
Sometimes kids who are that age are just not mature enough to make things happen.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about this whole situation is that I've always felt like I've kind of been the young guy in the anywhere I'm at. But it's like slowly the tables are turning, you know, which is kind of cool to see because, I'm not a kid, you know.
Right.
But I did start I recognized that I did start really, really young. So I did a lot of people that were around my life when I was young were significantly older than I was and already sort of established in whatever it was that they were doing.
Did you know that at the time? Did you get a sense
of that? I
didn't.
No, I never really thought about that. I didn't start thinking about that till later on in my life that I noticed that. I think maybe when I got, I don't know, when I was old enough to start, I don't know, at some point I think I started making friends that were a little bit more my age, and I started recognizing that how much of a difference, because at a certain time, you know, at one point in my life, all of my friends were just way older than me, you know, which is kind of weird, but yeah, that's I mean, that was kind of a thing that I feel lucky about also, because I did learn a lot from people when I was younger.
Do you you mentioned, you know, a couple of bumps along the way, you know school, you know, maybe not finished all the way, but it seems like you had a sense of drive, or like you said, even early on from learning knitting from your grandma, and the focus. Is that kind of, you know, like what led you to kind of continue on or keep going?
Well, I never wanted to waste my life, and it's funny because I just spoke with somebody a few months ago that kind of shifted my perspective on the whole situation when I was talking about saying that I was a bad kid. She kind of, it was like this sculpting class that I took. We had like a stone sculpting class. We had like a little talk, and this woman towards the end of the class, she said something like, you know, there's like, I just want to tell you something. You're not a bad kid. There's no bad kids. And that really kind of like stuck in my head. Yeah. And I started thinking about it, and it wasn't that I was a bad kid. It was just, I'm an adventurous person.
Yeah. Like
I was an adventurous kid.
Yeah.
And that's all that, you know, really looking back at it, that's what it was. I was just, I've always been that really adventurous person. Yeah. Right. So it wasn't that I was bad. I didn't want to waste my life. I wanted to do something with my life. And I was really into this whole thing. And then that shift really happened for me when I went into really working with Ryan. accounts, mm-hmm. you know. I think being in that place for me, it changed my world because I at the time I was still, I could have gone in the wrong direction really right. easily.
You're still.
But yeah. I was just, all I wanted to do was be there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would see like Ryan, I would watch Ryan do these, you know, the you know, do his paint jobs and stuff. And this was stuff that I was already really into. And I just didn't want to leave because mm-hmm. it would be like, okay, tomorrow we're going to leaf it. Tomorrow we're going to stripe it tomorrow. So I always wanted to be there. I wanted to go back to see what was going to happen next. Right. And I just kind of never left. So for me, that was a really, you know, important point in my life was kind of Ryan taking me in and yeah. taking the time.
Yeah.
Like he didn't have to take the time. I screwed up a lot of things, you know.
Right.
That gas tank was anybody else would have been like, this kid's full of shit. Like,
yeah.
like
yeah.
get him out of here. You yeah. know, like what you're wasting my time right now. Right. Like yeah. you're wasting materials, but he didn't look at it like that.
I think that's a huge point, right? Is when there's someone willing to invest a little bit of time in themselves mm-hmm. and he saw that in you. So
right. yeah. yeah.
When it comes to like that type of fabricating, you got to mess up along the way.
Yeah, I mean, this was before. So Ryan mainly did paint, you know, yeah. although he did everything. Ryan did everything.
He would jump in. Especially yeah. with that kind of, yeah. you know, hand, it's not that production paint, you know right, what I mean? Right. It's special effects and everything.
I mean, he would put so much. I remember there would be times that he would put so much time into something, airbrushing and doing whatever, and I was just his helper. So he would give me tasks that would require more responsibility.
Yeah,
right.
But I would still, there would be times where I would go in there with an X-Acto knife mm-hmm. and just
yeah.
Cut out just this, you know, you have to, when you have this masking paper, you just barely touch the paper. If you go too deep, you ruin the paint job.
Yeah. Right.
I did that a lot of times. Wow. You know, wow. After him putting in hours, and he would just come up and be like, all right, take it apart, sand it down, you know,
wow.
and just really not,
if you watch enough of those reality shows, they'll spend, 50 minutes on the fabricating yeah. side of it. And they're like, and then it got painted.
Yeah. We got to get it to paint. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nothing like that. In real life.
No doubt.
So he called it a reality show. It's a show.
In actuality, it's nothing like that.
So did that teach you like more patience? Even the knitting, I know, kind of set that mindset, but like the painting detail, did that kind of drive home more?
Yeah, I think the patience, of course, it amplified it, but I think I always had the patience. I think that's what I was saying is I think my grandmother taught me the patience yeah. when I was very young. You know, what yeah. kid is going to sit there when they're 3 years old and knit for, you know, I remember doing that a lot. So it wasn't like a one-time deal or anything. It was something that I was like kind of into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But which is weird because it's like motorcycles, you know, knitting. But it's just how it is.
No, it's like, you know, in the video I referred to earlier, you kind of mentioned creativity and, you know, mm-hmm. particularly I think the theme of it is kind of freedom.
Right.
And, you know, you find this in working with your hands. And I think a lot of other people do as well.
Yeah.
And it, mm-hmm. you know. People who look for something else probably are in search of that
right,
after
right.
maybe having done something they didn't maybe truly love for a while. So right. what got you into the motorcycle
yeah. world?
So counts did. Yeah, before that I was really just mainly into cars. I didn't know anybody with bikes or, you know, that was into motorcycles. So when I started working at Counts, I pretty much jumped right into bikes because they were doing more bikes than cars
okay.
at Counts
okay.
at the okay. time. Yeah. yeah. Counts yeah. kind of started, I mean, he had a collection of cars, but the I would say that in the shop, it was mainly for motorcycles. Like we were building okay. bikes. That's why the originals, mm-hmm. the original was Shannon, which was, he builds bikes. He was a motorcycle mechanic. And Ryan, who painted bikes, but he also was in the mini trucking world and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think the goal when Danny started the shop, it was predominantly motorcycle based builds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that same approach that you take now was kind of learned during those early years?
As far as what?
I was watching some videos in terms of like framing stuff out in copper. And kind so of creating that.
Here's the
to
thing
me, that's
is that,
like
yeah. Here's the thing is that it's kind of hard to explain too. Is that I'm completely self-taught. Other yeah. than, you know, I mean, Ryan taught me how to do body work.
Right.
He was teaching me how to paint and stuff, but it wasn't really what I wanted to do. But aside from the schooling that I did for a couple of months for welding, I'm entirely self-taught.
Okay.
Nobody was doing this accounts.
Wow.
Back then it was more, I don't want to take anything away from it, but it was completely different. Yeah, it was more of a, you know, you buy a gas tank and you bolt it on and you do this kind of thing. We were building these bikes that were not as extreme.
Right.
So all of these things that I do now, these are all things that I've kind of developed myself.
Your style.
Yeah. Like even TIG welding, I'm self-taught in TIG welding almost everything.
You compare notes with other bike builders and do they say wow, it's kind of cool the way you approach it?
The funny thing is that I feel weird because I've been doing this for a long time and I was always kind of hiding in the back of the shop and just doing my own thing. I wasn't too concerned with what anybody else was doing.
Yeah.
I would just focus on what I was doing. And it wasn't till later on I got out in my own shop and I started doing my own work in it, and it really started getting recognized that I started, you know, meeting a lot more people that are, you know, involved, people that I guess I did look up to as a kid, you know, right. I mean, you name them, anybody in the bike scene that, I've gotten lucky enough to where my work has gotten the respect from some of these people that I looked up to. But I'm completely self-taught with everything. That wireframe thing that you see, those are things that I've developed on my own.
Yeah, and did you need that type of 3D kind of replication in front of you opposed to just kind of like sketching it out?
I don't really sketch much, but so like this, for example, that we're looking at, I was just talking with a class earlier about this whole thing, is that this is something that I found by accident. So now the funny thing is that it existed before, way before. I mean, this has been something that has been done for a while. I was lucky enough to go to the Ferrari factory.
Oh wow.
And they had their original kind of wire bucks of the entire cars
that were
designed, not exactly, but
kind of
designed in this way. And I didn't know that. I didn't know it was like a real thing. So this was just something that I kind of stumbled across by accident.
Yeah.
Over the years, I've just been working on it and developing it. So this is part of what I teach in these workshops that I put on. But it's just one part of it. The actual making of the thing is one thing, but designing it is a completely different aspect of the work. Because it's one thing to be able to shape metal, but to be able to come up with designs, to me, is I think where I'm what I try to focus on more now. You understand what I'm saying?
It's like, the design thing is kind of like where your heart sounds like.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. For a while, I was really into the work, into doing the work. And I feel like at some point, I kind of gravitated more into learning design.
Yeah. So what is your source inspiration?
I love art. I love art. I love architecture. I love furniture. I love cars, obviously,
So what led to you wanting to start your own shop? Because you said you'd been working in the background in a lot of places, and what kind of made you want to go out on your own?
So that's a funny story too. So I was accounts for during the first seasons of whatever. I mean, I was part of the whole thing. I was part of when he was on the Pawn Stars thing, that whole thing. So originally it started with building a car for the old man.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Pawn Stars. So I was there during all that. We got the show. It was like everything that they wanted. It's like everything they ever wanted was to get this TV show. It was like supposed to be like this grand thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like their dreams to get this TV show. So we finally get the TV show, and I personally hated it.
Yeah, no. I get it.
I hated being in front of the cameras. I hated being behind the cameras. I didn't enjoy the people that it brought. It brought people that really wanted to be on TV.
Right.
It just created this place, this atmosphere that wasn't for me. I didn't want to be a part of. So at the time, about 2 years before that, my brother, he's actually a little bit older than me, but he's a bartender and he wanted to learn how to do something aside from bartending because it's all he'd ever done. So he asked me if he can come into the shop and start helping out. Mm-hmm. So he was helping me with accounts about 2 years before I left. And when the TV show happened, we did like the first, second, third season, something like that, maybe even a little bit more. And he just could tell that I wasn't happy being there anymore because there was a time that for me, counts was mine. It was my heart, you know. It was like everything I cared about was that place. Like I'd do anything for that place, which I did. I did a lot towards the last few years. I put in a lot of work.
But
I just wasn't happy. So one day he just comes up to me and he's like, "Hey, let's get our own place." And I was scared, you know. I didn't think we could make it happen. So he ended up getting a shop right across the street from Counts, and so
was that strategic?
Yeah.
Or just, it was a funny story.
Is that one close to Chubby?
Yeah, that's the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, it actually is right by Chubby. It's right. Funny. Yeah, right now I'm right next to Counts.
Okay.
One complex over from Counts, so you can see the back of their building from the front of mine. But I've always been on that
building.
Street. Yeah. But yeah, it just wasn't something that I wanted to do. I wasn't interested in being on TV I didn't want any of that because I had had enough of it being in that place. I was blessed enough to have gotten a little bit of glimpse of what that is really about and realize that that is definitely not for me. It's not what I want. I want my work to speak for myself. I'd imagine I'm here because of my work, not
I think you get that dynamic. And you know, one of the, so you know, I'm not a total gearhead, so I would never come on here and try to blow smoke up
your tailpipe.
Yes, exactly. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
But you know, I remember watching the folks at the Dallas Space Show. What was that thing called?
Gas Monkey.
Yeah. And the bearded, I forget his name.
Aaron?
Yeah, but he like, To me, I watched that in like Wheeler Dealer, where they'd always have like the mechanic guy, and it was not a whole lot of theatrics around it. It was more like I was like learning about cars. Like it was a very low impact, like kind of enjoyable way to see like cool custom cars, but yet I was familiar with not like hot rods or like kind of, you know, brought pieces from everything. But they particularly like on the Gas Monkey thing, they're doing a little bit to it. And they would walk you through, Aaron is the name. Yeah. They'd walk you through the build and kind of, I'm becoming a more informed consumer when I drag my car to the mechanic.
There you go.
You know, he's asking me like, is it something about electrical? I'm like, maybe if we check the, trying not to sound like a complete buffoon.
He looks at his hands.
But yeah, but the other stuff where it's like, you know, any reality show, you've got this built-in kind of like storylines I don't know. People love it. But yeah, it's not the easiest watch in the world.
I've never watched one episode of any of those things you just said. Right now. It's just not. Yeah, it's not for me.
Yeah.
Well, but, you're living it, right?
Yeah, you're living difference. It, and it allows other people to learn about stuff like that. And to me, that's where trying to raise the image of manufacturing, bring respect to the trades, it can open a door. My wife sat in on a couple of them, and she's, you know, we had the conversation today. This point, I'm going to tell him earlier. We have a Nuts, Bolts, and Thingamajigs that give scholarships to like trade schools and kids going to STEM careers. And she works with somebody in her vocational ed. She's like, "Well, I don't know about a trade school, but this kid needs some steel-toed boots." You know, I'm like, "Well, you'd have to fill out the paperwork to get the scholarship." And I'm like, "Just find out how much it is." But you know, to me, that's where. You know, and you're starting to see it now with the shift from college bound and all this. People are realizing that, you know, maybe you can find, actually, it's almost like it was in the 50s and 60s where you can make a decent life and find real, fulfilling meaning out of work.
Definitely.
Yeah, and to me, that's where these conversations come to life.
If anything, probably more.
Yeah.
You know, like Yeah, I've been really lucky with these workshops that I put on, that I've met a lot of people that take the workshops. Sometimes I don't understand why they take it, but I have had people that are what you would call successful in life, right? But they're not necessarily happy.
Right.
They're not fulfilled with their life. You know, that's why they're here. That's why they're doing. They'll say it. Yeah. You know, they just don't feel like they're the beautiful thing about what we do here is that at the end of the day, whether your day went good or bad, you can point at that thing and it's right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not, it doesn't go off into imaginary computer land or anything or whatever it is. It's right in front of you, whether it's good or bad, it's sitting right there.
You know, I think that's been, in a way, it's a, in your, the stories we talked about before recording and even now, you know, you can get a sense of, you know, you're kind of, you're courageous quietly, and yet you smile a lot, which is cool when you tell your stories. And I think that then that just, it relays or transfers to your work.
Definitely.
You know, and having fun. And I think, you know, you talk about this younger generation as people are coming up, you know, are they interested in welding? Are they interested in, you know, using an air hammer? Are they, you know, do they want to get, well, they don't want to get their finger caught in there, but, you know, they want to try different things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you are certainly a great example of, I think, of that adventure, you know, and it shows in your, in the work.
Yeah, thank you.